Yeah.
Good morning. I'd like to bring this meeting of House Education.
Let's be done with this baby.
To order. It's Monday, April 5th, and you can tell it's getting towards the end of the session. Present are Reverend Keller, Munoz, Edgman, Gardner, Boot, and myself, Chair Seaton. And remind us all about our cell phones. And then today we have House Bill 206. And if nothing else from the committee, we'll possibly be able to get out early today. So is there, before we take up 206, is there anything from the committee? Seeing nothing, let's go to House Bill 206. We had that before us, and we had an amendment, and that amendment was to, on page 1, line 6, change 12 to 11. And let me ask the recording secretary, is that your...
That amendment was withdrawn.
That amendment was withdrawn, and we've been joined by Representative Wilson. So that amendment was withdrawn. I will reinstate that amendment. So the amendment number two would be to change on page 1, line 6, the number 12 for grade 12 to 11. That would be grade 11.
And I'll object.
On line 6. And there's an objection from Representative Gardner.
We're on that bill.
So we had a little bit of discussion last time. I'll go ahead and review where we are on this. The reason we were, that this section, which we had planned to delete previously, did not delete, was because the information we got back from the department said that currently this would be not in the transcript, but would be in the cumulative file. And the cumulative file is not something that would be normally reported to the employers, is my understanding. And is that, and can we have the department come forward just to verify that my understanding of your memo of March 29th is correct? And would you identify yourself?
Yeah, for the record, my name is Les Morris. I'm the Deputy Commissioner at the Department of Education. And in response to your question, normally a cumulative file is not transferred to anyone. If an employer or even a university requests information from a high school, it's going to be on a transcript, which is usually a two-page summary at most of a student's high school career.
Okay, thank you. And there were questions about when was the appropriate time to take the test, whether that would be in 11th grade or whether that would be the 12th grade. Can you kind of reiterate what the department had told us on that?
We think it's most important the student takes it in the 11th grade for their official taking of the test so that it gives them additional information. If they were to take the test again, our regulations right now show that that test would be paid for, and that as long as the student shows improvement. I've talked to the team back at the department. They've also looked at, as long as the student took some of the WIN courseware, we might consider changing our regulations so that then it would be paid for, because that shows an effort to improve, even if they didn't improve. So we're looking at ways that both the first and the second taking would certainly be covered. We still think it's important that that be in the 11th grade, because it would give the students some focus for the 12th grade, hopefully. It would also allow students who scored quite well to maybe focus on other exams rather than retaking the work keys in the 12th grade. Some students may want to get their focus completely on the SAT or the ACT or some other important piece of, you know, examination, they need to go to whatever college that they've chosen to try to get into. So we think the 11th grade is important for that reason as well.
Thank you. And if we have this in the statute, would we need to change whichever grade that is, or if we do go to 11, which is what this amendment is, on page 2, line 12, where we say the results of the student's career assessment shall be displayed, would we need to go there and say the results of the student's highest level of career preparedness, so that it's very clear that if they can retake it in the 12th grade, and that what's going to be recorded is not this 11th grade exam, but the highest of their assessment?
Chair Seaton, I would say if you want to absolutely ensure that's the case, that I would suggest changing it to their highest score of their 11th or 12th grade, or just simply saying their highest score would be recorded on the transcript. I would say that probably could be handled through regulation. However, the clearer the statute is, the clearer it is that your intent is going to be followed. So a small change of saying the highest score would be recorded, I think, would take care of that.
Before we go further with the discussion, and this is only the author's side of the discussion right now, but I would like to amend amendment number 2 to add on page 2, line 12, conceptually, the words highest level of between students and career preparedness. So the sentence would read, the results of a student's highest level of career preparedness assessment shall be displayed in summary form on the student's high school transcript. And so that would, I'd offer that as conceptual amendment number 1 to amendment number 2. Is there objection? Seeing no objection, amendment number 1 to amendment number 2, and that's conceptual, is adopted. Now we have discussion on amendment number 2, which is Representative Gardner first.
Thank you. I think that doing this kind of testing, we have two goals, and sometimes they're a little bit in conflict with each other. One goal is to inform the student and teachers of the student's preparedness, such that the student can then know what they need to focus on for their senior year. That's the argument for doing the testing at the 11th grade, the junior year. The other intent with the testing is to inform employers or secondary schools of the student's highest achievement. That would be the argument for doing it in the 12th grade year. And what we're trying to do is one test and meet both goals. So we can say, do it in the 11th grade year by statute, and then it's up to the student to try to improve it and get the best score on the transcript. Or we can do it the 12th grade year in statute and by regulation offer it the junior year in the same way that the PSAT is available to students who plan to take the SAT their senior year. So I just think that we're in some respects replacing the high school graduation qualifying exam, and the goal of that was to let employers understand and secondary schools that students had mastered a basic high school level. That was the original idea of it, where students stand. So I'm on the side of taking it the senior year and having that be the statute, and school districts and regulation or whatever can have students take it in eighth grade if they want and keep going up. But that's my argument.
Is there further discussion on amendment number 2? As amended. Seeing none, Representative Gardner.
My problem is I like the amendment to amendment number 2, and I don't want to.
You can add it back in as a secondary amendment if this is defeated.
Oh, okay. And if I might, Mr. Chair, I'd like to point out that the amendment to amendment number 2, I think, supports my argument, the highest level, which would presumably be, if the students learned anything at all in their 12th grade year, it would be their 12th grade score.
Well, and Representative Gardner, on that point, I just, you know, every student is different. And, you know, would students necessarily take an extra test that's not required in their 11th grade if we're requiring it in a 12th grade? That would, I presume, be a voluntary kind of test, because we've been told by the department that if we have it in the 12th, they wouldn't require it of everybody in the 11th. And also the aspect of those students that know they're going to college and are more concerned about ACT or, you know, doing something other than retaking the work keys test in their 12th grade, that makes sense to me as well, to allow them to target where they want to go and what they want to do. So Representative Wilson, then back to Gardner.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Sorry that I was late. You guys were already on this amendment, so you might have discussed this. But was there any discussion about having in 10th grade? And then they have 2 years to fashion some kind of a program for themselves. And then by their senior year, then, if they want to take it again, they could. And that would be 2 years separated. And that makes a little more sense to me. And it gives them a chance as sophomores to think, oh, and kind of realize that, you know, if they haven't got it in their heads yet by 10th grade, that would help. And so to me, I think it would be better at 10th grade, and then 11th and 12th, they have 2 years to work it out into something that would benefit themselves. So that's kind of where I'm at. So I don't know what everybody else's feelings are on that.
Okay, and let's discuss Representative Wilson's point before we go to Representative Gardner. And I guess the thing that we're looking at is the department has said that they are going to be using WIN and Keytrain as a developmental all the way from 8th grade, which has tests and has performance, but they don't have the certification. And so the purpose for taking the more expensive work keys is that it has a certificated levels, and those should correspond to the WIN and Keytrain curriculum and where people are established in that, but without the expense. And so when we go, the idea is to have students that are have had a long enough period from 8th, 9th, 10th working on their career preparedness skills through work keys or through Keytrain or WIN program. WIN is the official one that the department uses throughout the state to develop those skills and to know where they are, but to actually have the certification come back from the National Testing Service where they certify those things. That was going to be done. That was the idea for the 11th or the 12th grade.
Okay, and can I follow up with that?
Follow up, Representative Wilson.
Just renew my in my mind then, what grades is the WIN test given, for sure? Not just when kids ask for it, because they don't do things like that very well. And so tell me, what grades are they required to take the WIN test?
And Representative Wilson, I'd like to go to the department and find out what the requirements across districts are.
Through the chair, Representative Wilson, the requirement and regulation is that 6th and 8th grade students would have to take the WIN assessment. And we've talked about WIN and Keytrain. They accomplish the same goals. They're very similar. One, we may go between the two packages. We'll have to settle on one or the other. But it's 6th and 8th grade is the required assessment years. And that assessment, by the way, is very closely tied to a curriculum. So it's more of a curriculum assessment to help them get into the right continued work of study to prepare for the longer-term assessment or the work keys assessment in the long term.
6th, 8th. Representative Book.
No, I didn't raise my hand.
Oh, I'm sorry. Anyone else on this point? Reverend Wilson?
I still think we should do the 10th grade again, either the win again at 10th grade or else the work keys.
And Reverend Wilson, I think that we can request that the department look at that through their regulatory provisions rather than, because this just deals with work keys. So if we could put that off for now, or did you want to make an amendment for win and keytrain on, or keytrain on this?
I'll think about it.
Okay, and we can ask the department to provide us an analysis of what they anticipate the curriculums adopted when districts know that there's going to be an 11th grade or 12th grade required work keys test, which is going to be basically a nationally normed, because those levels are, this is national kind of test, how they anticipate that the districts will respond when you have win required in 6th and 8th, and the district knowing that in the 11th there's a required nationally normed test that's going to be there, how they anticipate that their students will be prepared through 9th, 10th, and, you know, 11th grades. But we'll request that anyway. So I saw Mr. Morris writing that down. So we'll request that, because I think that's, you know, really important for us to understand what this curriculum is going to do. Yes, Reverend Wilson?
I guess what I would like to add to that would be, because those tests are kind of on the standards, if I'm remembering correctly, it's based on the standards, and right now all the school districts do their own standards. And so am I correct in that?
Mr. Morris, can you tell us what the 6th and 8th grade tests, are those Alaska-based or are those career assessment-based and national kind of program?
Through the chair, Representative Wilson, and the win and the key train that's required in 6th and 8th grade is it's part of a national curriculum that is connected, again, and aligned to the work keys. So it's not something based at the district level. It's a national curriculum they're using for that particular assessment.
Well, Representative Wilson.
Follow up then. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I read the Moore case last night, and in there, anyway, it says that all the school, we don't have a standard across the state because every school system does their own, and they would like to get it so that everybody's standards are the same, and it's us legislators' responsibility, not the departments, but us. And so I would like also to kind of figure out how you're going to get all the schools to be on the same standards. And that doesn't have to be today, you know.
Yeah, and we do have Wednesday a joint meeting with the Senate Education here, and that will be on the Moore case.
Okay. Yeah.
But Mr. Morris.
Through the chair, Representative Wilson, just in terms of this piece here, it by requiring that at 6th and 8th grade on the WIN or Keytrain tool, it does begin to standardize. And that, by having the work keys included in statute, which is something you're attempting to do here, and then the appropriate responses to prepare students for that through either WIN or work keys, it begins to actually do exactly what you said. We believe we're doing it in other ways. It's a bigger topic around the whole Moore case, but this actually begins to accomplish exactly what you're suggesting, I think.
I'll talk about it later.
Okay. Is there further discussion? On that point, Representative Gardner.
Mr. Chair, I think you kind of made my point. The wind test in the 11th grade, if it were to be repeated, would still inform students of what they need to do their senior year to maximize where they need to focus their efforts to maximize their work keys results, which will then be on the transcript. But I think doing the work keys in the 11th grade also has the potential for students who say, I've done high enough, I've finished with my high school requirements, this is what I need to get into trade school or do whatever. And we may have the unintended consequence that we've seen with the previous testing regime. So anyhow, I maintain my objection to the amendment.
Is there any other discussion on amendment number two? And amendment number two is changing on page one, line six, grade 12 to grade 11, and on page two, inserting highest level of career preparedness assessment. So, Secretary, would you please call the roll?
Amendment, conceptual amendment two to HB 206. Representative Keller?
Yes.
Representative Booth?
Pass.
Representative Gardner?
No.
Representative Munoz?
Yes.
Representative Wilson?
No.
Representative Edgman?
Yes.
Representative Booth on the pass?
Yes.
Chair Seaton?
Yes.
I have 5 yeas, 2 nays.
So amendment number two is passed on House Bill 206. Do we have further amendments on House Bill 206? Is there further discussion on House Bill 206? Representative Keller.
I actually would have an amendment, but it'd be almost disrespectful because it would deal with the high school qualifying exam, keeping it in place, and that's why I can't support the bill. I just wanted to reiterate that, well, I passed out a survey that was recently done in February and paid for by Senator Bundy, if you remember. And it shows pretty clearly that 75% to 85% of our constituents want something in place. And the heart of the problem with the bill is that, in my mind, is on page two, line 14. Where it says repealed and reenacted. And if you look at the first line of what is repealed, it is that a student may not be issued a secondary high school diploma. This is reading from the law 1403075. A student may not be issued a secondary high school diploma or a secondary school diploma unless the student passes. That's raising the bar to me. And then what we replace it with is the department shall, or the school shall require the student to take a test. And I think it's the wrong message, especially in the context of the possibility of the performance scholarship failing. If that happens, I wouldn't want to take away this bar as inadequate and actually harmful in at some level is what it's been. So. Again, I would take that section two. I have no problem with section one. I'd take section two, three, and four out if it were. But that, like I say, is almost a disrespectful move to make. So I'm just going on record saying I'm going to be voting against this, and I feel pretty strong. So thank you.
Okay, thank you. Further, Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So. In this bill, the exit exam is still in it.
Mm-mm.
It is out of it.
Representative Wilson, the exit exam would remain in place. However, the requirement to pass the exit exam with a certain cut score to graduate is removed. So the high stakes portion of the exit exam is removed.
Okay. I think we should talk about that. And the reason I say that is because I'm against it. I don't like it. I never have, although I voted for it a long time ago. But I don't like it. However, since the lawsuit came out, and I read it last night, now is the judge going to say we took it out because he said that we are not, have not done a good enough job for those five schools that were on the list, you know, that we didn't do enough, a good enough job to help those kids, and we should have been doing a lot more than we have, and that because of that, it was unfair to them to even take the high stakes exam because a lot of them didn't have standards in place, and so there's a lot going on. So if we take it away now, is that going to say, oh, instead of making sure those kids get extra help and make sure that, you know, he's saying, you know how IEPs are for special ed kids. Well, he's really essentially saying IEPs for everybody. Well, he called them something different. And the reason I question that is because of the fact that I'm trying to look at the page where that mentioned. Because of the fact, if we take that out, then what we're doing is saying, oh, they don't have to know that anymore, and so instead of helping them, we're taking the test away so they don't have to take it. So I don't know if that's good or not for us to be taking it away at this time because of that.
Okay, Representative Munoz and Les.
Thank you, Les. What percentage of students do not pass the test and get a certificate of attendance instead of a diploma?
And Representative Munoz, you might also look at this, the blue and black answers, because there was some information on there that you might want to link to.
Oh, is that better?
But that's okay, just so you can refer to it when Mr. Morris goes through it.
Through the chair, Representative Munoz, on the handout that the department provided, which was dated March 29th, 2010, on the back of the page, what we did is we did an analysis of the class of 2008, and what we found is that there were 270 students who were in 12th grade, had still not passed the exam and received a certificate of achievement. The data that is added, which is in red here, came from the last time I presented this information to the committee. The committee asked some additional questions, so I drilled a little bit further and had the research analysts dig in a little bit further on those issues. The other point I'd like to make, I think, at this time is just that the state board, I'd like to reiterate the state board's position is at this point they feel it would be unwise to remove the HSGQE requirement. They do think that there should be some conversation about it, but that we should really probably step back and do a very comprehensive look at our whole assessment and accountability program and be watchful of what's going to happen from the federal government, because the last thing we want to do is have two completely different inconsistent systems, and there are changes occurring. Not that we want to do whatever we have to only for the federal government. We want to do what's important for the state, but we want to also have a consistent program. And so they think this plays an important part and that it ought to be left in place at this time. The other piece is in terms of I want to just mention one thing about the Moore lawsuit since it was brought up specifically. One of the things that the judge pointed out, as Representative Wilson was saying, is that students who've not passed the exam in their 11th and 12th grade should have an individualized learning plan of how they are going to learn those skills they've missed. I can assure you every 11th and 12th grade in the five districts that we're referring to does have one, because we have copies of them at the department. We provided that last year, but we didn't actually provide the individual plans to Judge Gleason. If she needs that, we will provide those. We just re-audited those districts again this year. So I know you're having a longer hearing on this where the lawyers can get into the details of where we're at, but it's an ongoing litigation, and we have some different views of what's accomplished, and we believe on the concerns she has around the high school exam and learning plans, we have accomplished that, and we just may need to give clear evidence that proves that point. So I just think that's important to note. We have those. We audit them. I actually have an individual last year who read through every single plan from those five districts for each individual student.
Representative Munoz.
Since the high school qualifying exam first started, has the test gotten easier to pass?
Through the chair, Representative Munoz, since it's been used for accountability, it has not gotten easier. But the exam was first created in about 2000. Students took it. The pass rate was terrible. The legislature and the department at that time, I wasn't involved at that time, but so it's my historical knowledge is of reading the records, decided that there should be a change. The change statutorily was to say it was to assess basic competency skills or language similar to that. As a result, there were some adjustments made in the content of the test, particularly around mathematics, and then the cut scores were reestablished. The test was given for the first time for students to pass for the class of 2004, and in 2005, all students were held accountable. That was the first time special ed students were held accountable, and has not changed since that time.
Representative Keller and then Wilson.
On that point, Les, thank you, Les. Do you remember how the cut scores were set? What I'm remembering is that it was teams of teachers they took math teachers from across the state and they put them together, and they went through and they made the questions culturally appropriate and established a cut score. And as I remember it, it's awfully hard, I guess, for people who've been out of high school for a long time to really understand, but I remember, in my estimation, it was pretty easy, and yet the fail rate was very high. You know, the questions I saw, whatever. But the question is, who else was there? Parents on that team that set those cut scores? The university, was it just teachers or?
Through the chair, Representative Keller, the first time it was established, there were individuals from industry as well as parents were included. And what they do is they literally go through and they take the test themselves. And then they look at the standards, the written standards that are developed, and they make a determination at what point the test they're taking, by the way, gets from the easiest item to the hardest item. It isn't ordered the way the students would take it. But they say, at what point in taking this test has a student passed enough, gotten to a hard enough item to say they've met those standards? And then it's they go through a process to iron out the differences. They don't necessarily come to consensus on it, and we don't strive for that. We actually look at the mean of what their results are, and that's how a cut score is established. There's actually a lot of technical guidance about how you set them, and that's the established way cut scores are set at this time.
Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Les, has the board met since the Moore case decision happened?
Through the chair, Representative Wilson, they have not. They had a March meeting, and since this and by the way, this is an order. It's not her final decision. It's another order for us to provide more information. They've not met since the decision was just out last Wednesday, but the board has been briefed on the decision and provided the documentation so that they are aware of the current order.
Okay.
Follow-up, Representative Wilson.
Okay. Here's my feeling. Since we did have the individual that's what they called IRPs, or individual remediation plans. So if we had those and the district had improvement plans, then I say get rid of it. you know, if we're in compliance with what they, you know, what the court ordered, then get rid of it.
Mr. Morris, when the high school, when the exit exam came in, did we have no child left behind assessments and the requirements to meet adequate yearly progress in all the grades?
Chair Seaton, when this legislature passed and then even amended the statutory language on the HSGQE, No Child Left Behind was not yet in place. By the time we implemented the assessment, we were working also at that point to implement No Child Left Behind. But this law, the HSGQE came first, and then came NCLB that followed with AYP for all schools and testing across all grade levels 3 through 10.
So I guess what I'm trying to figure out is we had a test that went in for a reason because we didn't have a way really to measure and to hold accountable districts and district policies and student achievement. And we implemented this as a way to do that. And then on top of that, we have now the federal requirement that requires not just one test in 10th, starting in 10th grade and then on if they haven't passed it. We have this annual assessment for AYP. So other than the purpose of having a high stakes portion, is the assessment and the ability to assess the progress of students and school districts in meeting the educational goals for Alaska being served by the other test now, or is this test still necessary? Since does it serve the, basically, other than that high stakes portion, a complementary or corollary purpose to the No Child Left Behind?
Well, Chair Seaton, a couple of things. Before No Child Left Behind, we did have other assessments. They were within grade spans, though, so we were required by the federal law to give a test in 3, 6, 8, and then a high school assessment. And what No Child Left Behind did is created consistency across all the grades 3 through 10. The information that is provided from that assessment is what we use for accountability. It gives good, clear information to educators about performance of students as a one-time snapshot, because again, they have to obviously look at students more than just once a year. And so the HSGQE plays a role in that, but not in terms of school accountability. Its role is, just as you said, it's high stakes for that individual student component. And there is no other component in our assessment program that holds, has high stakes for students. The rest of the program is high stakes for a school, and particularly Title I schools. So you're correct in that the information is pretty robust now because of all the other assessments we have. But this is a piece that the state board feels is important because it has a high stakes nature for students. And while they're not opposed to one day replacing that, they want to be very careful and cautious about that.
Thank you. And Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Les, for using the WIN test, I know that kind of tests, wouldn't that tell teachers where the kids are at?
Through the chair, Representative Wilson, it would, within regards to the WIN curriculum that exists, and it helps a teacher determine where in that curriculum should I start this student. It does not tell where students are relative to our state standards. And it does not, and even if we do the WIN, it doesn't make the other assessments that we give at the 6th and 8th grade go away. They have to stay in place because we must test our state standards. So it hopefully that answers that.
Further discussion?
Yeah.
Representative Keller.
Just a comment. We call it a high stakes element, and I was just thinking about that term. It's definitely high stakes for a sophomore in high school. In other words, that's right there in front of them, you know, and it makes a big difference to them whether it pass, whether they pass or fail. But I don't think it's high stakes. The problem we have is proficiency. You know, if we compare our proficiency with the rest of the United States in the basic learning skills, NAEP is the one I use because it's an international reference. And I don't think we, you know, anyone in the U.S. has ever gotten over 50% proficient. In other words, and it's, you know, real spooky. So the point that I'm trying to make is that when you look at it from the perspective of the post-secondary, they say, hey, our K-12 kids need to come to us with a better education. That's not high stakes. Not high stakes to the post-secondary. And employers say, hey, you need to send us children that are able to do the job, and we don't care. It isn't high stakes to them. They want a better product from K-12. And I think that's much the same with parents, and I think it's the same with legislators because we represent parents. So so I would just argue that the term high stakes, just think about what it means. And there's a little more to it than that. It also has to do with the attempt to set a standard that is known. And I would be the first one to tell you that I was here in the process when those standards were set. It was very frustrating to see them beat down from something that was really good, I thought, you know, to something that was minimally effective or, you know, just real low level and everything. And again, I would just argue that we need to keep that low high stakes in place until we solve the problem of really raising the bar for our K-12 kids.
Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And it's obviously not working. The universities are saying, you've got all these kids, we have to do all this remediation. So if the test isn't working and it's not, you know, obviously we are failing. When we have to send bunches of kids at the college level and pay all that money because they haven't learned it at K-12, shame on us. And the high stakes exam, it's at an eighth grade level, at least for math. I don't know about the rest of it, but and then I just think that we've been using it, and obviously it hasn't been working. So why should we keep it? I mean,
Representative Gardner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We've had testimony a couple times about that the Board of Education supports keeping this, and yet when the board was here and we asked them about their role, and they said their role was to work on the regulations to support the policy that we set. And on the 19th of March, when I thought we were going to be voting on House Bill 206, I actually started making my comments, and I wrote down a quote from Les. He said, State Board supports keeping the high school graduation qualifying exam, not that we ought not look at something down the road. And I just think we're down the road, and it's our job to look at it now, and so I'd like to see this bill move out now.
And I just like to say that when we're talking about high stakes, we got to remember we're only talking about high stakes for less than half our kids, because in 10th grade, spring of the year when they take it, I think it's 86% pass the English portion, the English and writing portion, and 50% pass the math. So as a sophomore, that's not high stakes for them anymore. So what we're doing is saying that we're going to do all this concentration and on those areas, trying to get that, but we're really only talking about the proportion of our students that are having trouble taking that test. And so anyway, it's when we talk about exit exam and we think about high stakes tests, we think, as the original intent was, this is going to be a rigorous test leaving high school, and you're going to have to, you know, demonstrate that you really know a whole lot. And that was the revision that went to minimum competency. And so anyway, that's where we are. Any other comments on this?
Just a clarification.
Representative Munoz.
So by passing this, the high school qualifying test, the test remains in place, but the requirement to pass for graduation goes away?
That's correct.
So why would you give the test then?
The information that we had was, that was given to us, was that it has served a purpose, that a number of people would like to replace it, but they don't have the thing to replace it yet. And so that was the testimony that came before us. There may be other questions, but yeah, Representative
Gardner. Mr. Chair, do I correctly understand that the test remains in place only in regulation, not in statute?
The test is in Section 2. The test is still there.
In our bill?
In our bill. It's Section 2. They'll be required to take a competency examination. It doesn't say that it has to be this examination. They could substitute a different competency examination. They could substitute a different timing. My presumption is that since we have the other assessments going, that we wouldn't be, that those competency testing could be used, and the department and the school board could assess any way, and maybe we'll ask Mr. Morris, but that's what I read this. Each public secondary shall require students to take a competency examination in English, in reading, English, and mathematics. And the department shall determine the timing, the form, and the contents of the examination. So this would actually allow them to go to end-of-class exams, which...
NCLB exams.
Yeah, they could use the No Child Left Behind standards. They could determine whatever is best. So this doesn't mean, but this does not say that that the district or the department must stop giving the current exam. It just says that they're free to use whatever method of getting a competency examination in these three areas. And that the competency testing shall be included in the transcript.
So, Mr. Chair,
Representative Gardner.
It means then that we are no longer requiring that schools administer the high school graduation qualifying exam. They may choose to do so, the Department of Education may choose to do that, or use the testing that's done under No Child Left Behind, or use WIN or WorkEase or whatever they choose. We're no longer requiring that every student take it. So we're removing the requirement for the examination as well as, for that particular examination, as well as the high stakes element.
My understanding is that the statute would read just like it is on lines 15 through 18, that there must be a competency examination in these three areas, and it must be recorded on the transcript. But, I don't, unless Mr. Morris can direct us someplace else, I don't see that it directs this particular examination as being the method of getting that competency. Mr. Morris.
Chair Seaton, and I think this will address Representative Gardner's questions as well. What the statute it does allow some flexibility of what test we use, but the test must assess performance standards that we have in place. So it could be continuing the HSGQE, or it could be going to our current standards-based assessments we use for compliance with No Child Left Behind. However, the statute also leaves in place that a student continues to take it if they don't get a passing score. So we need to still have a piece that allows us to give students the exam in their 11th and 12th grade year should they not pass it once they take it the first time currently, which is in 10th grade. So.
And Mr. Morris, would you direct us to that section?
If it's on your working draft C, it's on page 2. If you go to line 22, there's section B under there, under 14.03.075B. It talks about a student who fails to take the exam. would be given a opportunity, or actually they're required to take it at least yearly. The following section C gets into the requirements we have under the current statute for a student with disabilities, which reads through all the way on to page 3 down to line 22, I believe, is the exact language out of the current statute. The other thing that this statute does do, which will cause us to re-examine any of our assessments we use, is that I don't believe the language on page 2, line 20, is in the current statute where it says measure college readiness. That's new language, I believe, that we'd have to then look at our assessment to determine what does it do in terms of college readiness. So that would be an adjustment.
Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Les, just because we've taken it out of the statutes and because it gives you flexibility, could you, if you wanted to, just continue with it and make it keep the high stakes part, because it doesn't say not to?
Through the chair, Representative Wilson, I would not be able to answer that. I think that I'd have to turn to our attorneys. Usually, we cannot impose something that I'd have to look at our other rights within the department that the legislature has given to the department. And I don't believe if you take it out of statute, my initial thought would be that we'd have to take it out of our regulations as a high-stakes individual student test. I don't know that it would stand up legally if you remove this. I think you're giving us the intent you want it removed as a high-stakes test. I think that we would find ourselves in a legal dispute if we left it in our regulations.
Mr. Morris, is the requirement for graduation also district generated? So if a district wanted to have a exit exam as a requirement for their graduation certificate from their school, that they have the ability to do that under their criteria?
Chair Seaton, I believe that districts could, because they could make it part of an absolute requirement that they have in their local requirements for graduation.
So there is the ability. Representative Keller.
It's kind of on that point. but it isn't, I'm not asking a question here that I expect to get a real good answer today, because I didn't ask Les beforehand. But would you care to venture a guess, Les, of what we spent getting the HSQE in place? I remember there was contracts with McGraw-Hill, and then we took it over, and there was fiscal notes, and there's then the upkeep of it and all that kind of thing. I mean, as I recall, it's a pretty significant investment. Have you looked at that, or is that would that be a historical question you have to dig out?
Through the chair, Representative Keller, I might be able to give a sense of that that would help you. When we were working with CTB McGraw-Hill, the costs ranged in the area of a couple million dollars just for this component of it, and then some of the development years would get as high, probably closer to $3 million to $3.5 million. Our current assessment probably runs around, for the retake portions, a little over $1 million. But again, we also give it in the 10th grade combined with our high school exam, and so our 10th grade standards-based assessment. And so, and that's mixed with those costs along with our other exams. So, but you can guarantee it's a million or more every year that we've had it, some years multiple millions. If you want exact numbers of what this assessment's cost, we could go back and look at that. The one other point that I think it's important to note, we would have to also look at what we do for students who've not passed the exam in the years when it was required, because any adult who actually leaves the school system in Alaska with a certificate of achievement may come back to any high school test center at any point in their life, as long as they're a holder of a certificate of achievement, and retake the exam. So at 25, if I have a certificate of achievement I earned, you know, back in 2004, I can now come back to a high school testing center and take it and earn it, pass the test, and then get a diploma from my originating school district. So we would have to do something for all those students who didn't pass, should they want to come back from 2004 to whenever the enactment of this is.
Mr. Morris, where in here does it say that it has to be administered in grade 10?
Chair Seaton, that actually is regulatory language, and it isn't in here. We've just the statute left that open, and then the department and the state board, the state board developed regulations to say it should be first given in the spring of their 10th grade year.
And, you know, I think part of the problem with the exam is that it is, I mean, we now have the No Child Left Behind, we have the, you know, the standards exams and all, and yet we have regulations that requires this, what was to be an exit exam, given not quite as an entrance exam, but just about, I mean, we're given in the spring of 10th grade, where, you know, the majority of kids pass. And so I don't see that if this passes, it's going to require you to keep in place a 10th grade exam. It could be 11th, or it could even be in 12th grade, because the only thing is if they're given it 1 year and they didn't pass it, they have the ability to take it in the following year. So do you read that the same way, that the department has a lot of flexibility, or the state board has a lot of flexibility around working on a competency testing and putting it on the transcript?
Chair Seaton, I think that would be true. I think that the department could work with the state board, and the state board could change their regulations to require this in a higher grade than the current 10th grade. I think if we do that, it may have some development costs to it, because of a couple of issues. The development costs are making sure it's college ready skills and we've got the right items on there to get to that, and then it may be an additional assessment built for a higher grade level than 10th grade.
And I guess that's what we're, one of the problems that we've come to is that, as you point out, and major college readiness, because I think that everybody concerned would say that 50% of our sophomores are not ready to go to college.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that this test, exam that we have with current cut scores would not pass with flying colors, mm-hmm. college readiness preparedness. So maybe those could be looked at the higher scores on that exam. Or something, but that would need to be changed. That would need to be assessed. Is there of course, this has a long ways to go, and I think that the question becomes whether this is policy we want to do. There's also the question that as discussion if we wanted to have a delayed effective date so that there was time to integrate these things instead of just saying, oh, 90 days after passage, all this stuff has to be there, which is impossible, probably. Representative Edgman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess a couple of comments, more high level than detailed. The first would be to Les, would be to pose a sort of a hypothetical question. Do you see a scenario down the road where, you know, the Governor's Scholarship Program gets into place? And I'm just looking at my notes, 4 years of math, science, language arts, 3 years of social sciences, where down the road that this exit exam might mirror that more than it does today?
Through the chair, Representative Edgman, actually I think that would make good sense that it would mirror that. I think that an assessment needs to be reviewed and changed from time to time to make sure we're getting at what we want. And if we want students to pass with higher level skills, we've got to address that. That's why when I spoke about the measures of college readiness, which is really what the GPS is after, I just indicate that's a change. It's not a change that I think is a bad one. It's just one that will take some effort on the part of the department, but I think it is a good thing, and I think it aligns better with the GPS.
I had one point. I had one point, but I'll yield to on this point.
Yes, on this point.
Yeah.
Representative Keller.
Yeah, thank you. Through the chair, Representative, you use the word mirror, and Les used the word mirror. Could we use the word measure? I mean, down the road, say 5 years, let's just pretend here that the performance scholarship passes. I would think within 5 years, it may be very interesting to see that if there's any, what the changes are on the HSQE, if it were continued to be in place and to continue to be offered at the same level as it is right now. And the question is that a possibility, or do you see that as a flawed desire or hope?
Well, through the chair, Representative Keller, I'd have to step back and look at the statutory language very carefully now in terms of if it may require some statutory shift in language, because right now the current statute speaks of basic competency or essential skills of basic competency or something to that regard. To me, that's not college readiness. That's something different. But you also want to, over time, I think, align your systems to get at what do you want? What do you want all students to leave with? And so once you have a system in place, more kids are going to college, you really have a good understanding, what does it take for a 12th grader to leave the school system and go into a post-secondary institution and not have to take a remediation course and build an assessment program backwards that makes sure that's what you're getting to? I would see over time a need to change. And I think actually that's what the state board is saying, that we ought to take a comprehensive look at that and say, what would it take to get to what we want our students to have?
Representative Keller.
If I could, I don't mean to interrupt, but it's on this point. Maybe you missed my question, but as I understand it, the HSQE was designed to measure basic fundamental proficiencies. And you're saying that's not the same as college readiness. And I understand that. But what I'm saying is that the original intent of the test, basic proficiency measurement, and we make some changes on with a performance scholarship system, it would seem like it'd be very helpful for us to know if there's been any proficiency changes in the mathematics and the reading skills and the writing skills.
Through the chair, Representative Keller, I think I better understand your question. And I think what you're getting at is, would we see student skill levels changing on the HSGQE, students being able to master more complex problems as a result of the GPS? And I think we would. I think that's the intent of the GPS, is to raise the standards, raise the bar, set out an expectation that students really want to strive for. As a result, I would certainly hope, and I can't imagine you wouldn't see students also being mastering more complex problems that are more at the higher level of the HSGQE in terms of problems they would have to get correct.
Thank you.
On that point, Mr. Morris, if you were changing that test to measure those higher competency levels, and you were doing that and left it as a high stakes test, then for high school graduation, what would you expect to, I mean, we would be back to our original problem of having a very high level exit exam and saying this is what we want every student leaving high school to do, and if we had it as a high stakes test, it means that all of those students that were in high school diploma mode instead of GPS mode would probably, many of them would not be passing that test. And isn't that why the whole test was changed around to be a basic skills test anyway, and has created our problem?
Chair Seaton, I think that's accurate. If you if you change the test in terms of the cut score. In responding to Representative Keller's question, what I was speaking to is not necessarily changing the cut score, but we would see kids scoring at higher scale score levels on that test that far exceeded the cut score. Because I do think that if you're going to find yourself in this dilemma, if you change and make this a higher high-stakes test, you're going to have more students that don't get a diploma until you make sure your system has driven for higher expectations of all those students.
Okay, thank you. Representative Edgen.
Yes. My last point, unrelated to the question at hand, but to you, Mr. Chairman, we have done a lot of work in Hospital 206.
Yep.
It has undergone many iterations, and I think has really sort of covered a lot of fundamental areas in the whole spectrum of education. Looking at my notes here, the student count period, the exit exam, work keys, dropout rates, college readiness, we have sort of covered the gamut, if you will. And so my question is there going to be some kind of a written summation of all the discussion that went in this, knowing that clearly this bill, I don't mean this facetiously, I'm serious, that this bill, you know, really, at least it's been my perspective, that this has been a conversation piece, but albeit a pretty important conversation piece, and I think it's going to serve as maybe a foundational aspect of what the next education committee goes forward with on a lot of these issues, because many of these issues, all of them, in fact, are all evolving and probably will evolve in a time. But that the conversation that this committee has had on this bill, again, all these subjects, multiple hearings, be sort of condensed into some sort of document that's there on for record keeping. Obviously, we can't, purport to affect what the upcoming education committee would do on any of these issues, but at least to have some kind of a narrative that sort of wraps its arms around all these different items that we've discussed. And not that it would draw any conclusions, because there aren't any conclusions, relatively speaking, because all these issues are in a state of flux and development. But I guess it would be my recommendation, Mr. Chairman, that we have some kind of white paper that does, whether it's two or three pages or how brief it might be, sort of sum up all the work we've done on House Bill 206 and its versions. And be a document that might be there for the department or this upcoming task force that may be into place through Senate Bill 221, maybe even the board to look back on and use as a guiding document in whatever manner chosen.
Thank you, and Representative Edgman. We've received from Finance Committee members a list of 15 questions relating to what the Education Committee has accomplished, the tasks that were set out in the task force that we had a couple years ago that actually led to the establishment of the Education Committee. And so I've been generating those answers, and we're going to put that together as a white paper. So these other issues could be also attached onto that as other issues that were discussed. And, we have considered House Bill 206 an omnibus package to put things into, to exactly as you say, drive the discussion on those issues. We've removed those issues where we felt. Where we're at on 206 right now is we have two issues here. They don't become official. It's never on the basis, it's never on the record unless it passes from committee. So we're in that dilemma. We could, if we decide that we just want to discuss these things, we could leave this in committee as well. If we want to pass as a note to a future committee, if we want to have this on the record that this is our, that these two things we want to pass on and have them on basis, then we could do that and then also discuss them. So. Is there further discussion on House Bill 206? Representative Munoz.
I kind of go back and forth, but right now I'm a little bit uncomfortable moving it forward because we seem to be kind of torn on the two issues in this bill. And there are kind of a number of questions still open. If we did away with the high stakes portion, you know, what happens to all of those students that just received a certificate of achievement? You know, what kind of message is that, that now, you know, now that requirement wouldn't be in place? So, you know, if they had been in school today, then they would have gotten the high school diploma. So I'm a little bit troubled with that, the mixed message. And then I'm also concerned about the fact that kids that take the test often think that they're done with high school. So I think that's an argument for doing away with it, the high stakes portion. But right. You know, I still have some concerns over that as well. And then also concerned with the governor's scholarship program and how that might tie in with the testing, with the high stakes testing requirement, and how that might segue with the requirements of the GPS program. So I guess what I'm saying is there are a lot of moving variables, and it seems kind of still a work in progress, and I think it might be premature to move it out.
And Representative Munoz, I understand it's one of those things you can all kind of. You can only beat a dead horse so much, if it's a dead horse or if it's not. You know, I mean, we've massaged this bill in many different aspects, and, you know, I as the chairman have not driven this discussion. We have taken lots of elements in. We've pulled elements out. It's been totally up to the committee to, by committee vote, to take those things in or take them out. If we want to put in a conceptual amendment to have a delayed implementation, I think that that would solve many of the structure, of the problems. And so, just to remove that aspect of the immediate effective or the 90-day effective date, I'd offer an amendment to conceptual amendment number 3 to add a delayed effective date or implementation date of 2012.
Okay.
And we have an objection. So the conceptual amendment number 3 is delayed effective date till 2012.
Is that when the bill would pass out?
And that would be, why don't we make that July,
stop it.
July 1, 2012, because that would be the end of the fiscal year, and it would be between startings of years, but that would give time for implementation. And there was an objection by Representative Keller, and do you want to speak to your objection?
Yeah,
Representative Keller.
Yeah, I just would say that extending the date of effectiveness doesn't do anything very positive or constructive on what we're trying to do. Yeah. There's no harm in waiting and seeing, for example, how we do on the performance scholarship. We hope that passes. And, I don't think it'll hurt us a bit to wait another year or two to make that decision.
And Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Can I? I just thought of something that I don't think we've talked about before, really. If we take away the high stakes, can some parents say, my kid didn't graduate, and I'm going to sue the state because they take it away, but when my child was in that area, I just want to know, Les, can you check with your attorneys and give us an answer later on, you know, about that, what would happen? I mean, can they do that? I mean, I'm sure there's some parents that have been upset because their kids didn't graduate. So if we take the test away now and say, oh, well, we're not going to do that, what are the ramifications that we might not be thinking about?
Through the chair, Representative Wilson, I certainly could ask our attorney, but I can tell you what their answer will probably be, that it's so speculative that they wouldn't be able to give a very good response. if they can find something they felt violated on and they have an attorney or they themselves can bring that forward, they can take us to court, certainly. But I think it would be really speculation for an attorney or the department to guess on that particular issue. The one thing to keep in mind, if I were a senior right now and had to pass this exam and you put this statute in place and it's going to fall in place in 90 days, I'd just not pass one of my courses and wait till next year and graduate free of this exam. And the same's going to happen in a delayed effective date. You're going to have students who, you know, they're 18 years old, they might not have passed the exam, they're one course short. Well, they'll just leave, they could potentially leave the system, come back in the fall, graduate at semester, and not have passed the exam. So no matter what you do in terms of removing the requirement, people will play games. They'll play legal games, and they'll play those kinds of games, and that's just what happens. But you can't, I don't know that you can run around chasing those kinds of issues and try to fix that. That's trying to make a law to address behaviors, and I don't know that you can do that.
Follow-up? Follow-up, and then Representative Munoz.
I guess what I want you to do is, we can't guess, but would they be successful if they did? That's, I mean, you know, is there something in there that, I mean, you know, that's what I'm, I just, yeah, you know.
Representative, I'm not opposed to asking. I'll ask for you, but I think you're going to get, we
same
don't
thing.
Know. We thought we had been clear with Judge Gleason, and we thought that this last order should have been on our side and ruling on our behalf. So that would be it's just be a very difficult answer.
Representative Munoz.
Thank you. Well, it raises an interesting point in that in 2008, in your analysis, there were 270 that received a certificate of achievement. Mm-hmm. So if you extrapolate out from 2005 on, that could be over 2,000 students that completed high school but only have a certificate of attendance. Now that's a big number.
And all I can say is the discussion we're having is saying, oh, we can never change a graduation requirement. If it becomes, we can never remove any graduation requirement, is what this discussion would lead to, because somebody would say, well, gee, 20 years ago I failed to graduate because there was a different requirement, and now you've changed the graduation requirement, and therefore I was disadvantaged when I went to school 20 years ago, or 5 years ago, or 2 years ago. You know, I think that, you know, we're setting policy for the state of Alaska, and if we say that, gee, we're changing, I mean, that's what we do here, is look at what we think the best policy for the state of Alaska is. Some of us are going to vote on one side, some of us are going to vote on the other side. But anyway, we have amendment number 3 before us, which is delayed effective date of July 1, 2012. We have an objection. Objection maintained. Objection is maintained. Would you please read the roll? And this is on conceptual amendment number 3 to have a delayed effective date of on section 2.
It'll be new
set. But the delayed effective date is on the implementation or the removal of the exit exam for a high stakes exam.
Amendment 3, House Bill 206. Representative Gardner.
No.
Representative Munoz.
Yes.
Representative Wilson.
No.
Representative
Edgman?
Yes.
Representative Keller?
No.
Representative Booth?
Yes.
Chair Seaton?
Yes.
I have 4 yeas, 3 nays.
So by a vote of 4-3, conceptual amendment number 3, implementing delayed effective date on section 2, on the exit exam has been adopted. Further discussion. Representative Booth.
Chair Seaton, if you would be ready to entertain a motion. I think that we have gone through extensive discussion. We have raised several very poignant questions, and I think it's time to allow some of our colleagues this information so that there can be further discussion. There's no proof this is going to pass, but what we've done here is, I think, a very huge component of what we, you know, the discussions have revolved around this last year, and I would like to move this on so that we could have some more discussions from the rest of the legislature on this and see if there is merit in this. So if you would entertain a motion, I'd like to move CS for House Bill 206 / C from committee with
as amended.
As amended with recommendations and fiscal notes.
Mr. Chairman?
Okay, and we have an objection.
I'd like to amend that to 2012. I'm teasing.
We have an objection. Does anyone discuss the... Madam Secretary, would you call the roll?
I'm Amy Kelly.
Pass.
Representative Wilson.
Yes.
Representative Edgemond.
Yes.
Representative Keller.
No.
Representative Book.
Yes.
Representative Gardner.
Yes.
Representative Munoz on a pass.
Yes.
Chair Seaton.
Yes.
I should have said respectfully.
I have
50 days left. So, with a vote of 6-1, CS for House Bill 206 is amended, passes with individual recommendation. That's fiscal notes. Is there anything else to come before the committee? With that, we will be adjourned at 9:25.